Hi, I'm Kim LaPree from the Teachers Need Teachers podcast, a part of the Education Podcast Network, just like the show you're listening to now. Shows on the network are individually owned and opinions expressed may not reflect others. Find other interesting podcasts at edupodcastnetwork.com.
There's a whole lot of educators that will use that phrase, growth mindset, but their actions are the exact opposite.
Welcome to Devil's Advocate, a Leader of Learning podcast series. Join co-hosts Rochelle Danae Poth and me, Dan Krynas, as we tackle trending topics in education from all angles, backed by sound research, where no topic is too big or too small, and where you can be part of the action. Let's dive right in. All right, once again, Leader of Learning, I am so happy to have you here for what is the fifth installment of the Devil's Advocate series, and somewhat of a different and maybe special, more special rendition of our monthly series. And before I get to why, let me bring on my regular co-host, Rochelle. How are you doing?
I'm doing great, Dan. It's good to be here with you today and our guests to join in this conversation. So definitely looking forward to it. I look forward to our chats back and forth every single month.
Yeah, I know we mentioned this last time too. Again, it doesn't feel like it's been a month since we recorded last, but time's flying somehow. I don't know. There's a lot going on clearly in the world these days, but we're having fun, I guess. So it's probably what that means. And as we mentioned, we do have another, I'm going to call him a co-host. Why not? You know, we're all co-hosts here in this episode. We're bringing on another co-host here today with us, Mr. Ken Shelton. First of all, thank you so much for being with us. Just in case my audience is not as familiar with you as they are with Rochelle and me, please introduce yourself and tell everybody who you are, where you are, and what you do.
All right, right on. First of all, I appreciate the opportunity to spend this time with the both of you. And I think that the audience should know, since they can't see us, that you and I, we have the same hairstyle.
That is true.
I love it. We wear it well.
I feel like that's become like the universal kind of, I don't want to call it a backhanded compliment, but I'm just going to say compliment people are like, oh, you have a good head for it or something weird like that.
I'll take it. I mean, yeah, because the opposite is, you know, you should try to grow your hair. Like, newsflash, I can't.
Exactly.
No, it's a pleasure to be here. But, you know, I mean, so for the audience, you know, my name's Ken Shelton. I am based in Los Angeles, Southern California. I've worked in education for well over 20 years. I'd say the vast majority of my time in education was in the classroom. I taught in the Los Angeles Unified School District for 18 years. And, you know, I would say the basis of the work that I do both then and now is all around the use of technology, which I'm a staunch advocate for, not a devil's advocate, pun intended, and around equity, you know, access and opportunity. How are we, providing additional access and opportunity for students to be not only fully engaged in our learning, but for that learning to serve as a catalyst for their own empowerment, for them to actualize their full potential. So, you know, for me now, the writing that I do, which I need to do more, the speaking that I do, which I love doing, the advising and consulting is really around looking at many of our institutions and our systemic components of education that, as I like to say, that lead to the predictability of success.
You know, you mentioned the magic word equity, and that's not what this episode is about, but I kind of wanted to just throw in there the fact that just this week, the state that I live in, Connecticut, our governor announced that we are the first state. Ken, you're nodding. You must have heard this already. That's awesome. First state to put devices in the hands of all students who need
all
them,
students,
regardless of socioeconomic status and living situations and everything. And, you know, I don't necessarily take that, I guess what I'm trying to say is I take that with a grain of salt a little bit. Like, it's amazing. It really is. But I do realize that as a state, Connecticut is one of the wealthiest there is. And so I'm hoping now that we can do something to help others who are not as fortunate. But I think it's a great step in the right direction.
It is. I think there's a couple of things. So, you know, there always has to be a first, and hat tip to Governor Lamont for, my guess is probably working with your State Department of Education to say, okay, here's something that we can address literally right now. You know, I have had the privilege of working with several districts, especially several affluent districts in your state. And, you know, you have a number of economically disadvantaged and economically challenging areas, especially in Hartford. But the bottom line is the first step is that. Now, what I would hope to see as a follow-up, which is, by the way, some of the policy level work that I've done with several state departments of education, especially here in California, is, you know, handing out the devices is step one. But what is the infrastructure? Okay, so if I get a device and I don't have broadband access, then how robust is my experience going to be? And then, of course, we're all educators. How is access to that device now that is universal going to provide a transformation of the learning experiences that all students have in the entire state?
Yeah, great points. Definitely stuff, you know, food for thought, stuff to consider moving forward into the future. Now, what really brought us all together here today is the topic of growth mindset. And as Rochelle and I do here every month, we really like to delve into trending and, dare I say, controversial topics that could be thought of and felt and experienced differently from all stakeholders in education, educators, students, administrators, families, maybe even, as Ken, you mentioned, government officials. And we try and really tackle each topic from looking at those various vantage points and perspectives. And this episode actually came about, or the topic came about, because I've mentioned, my listeners know this about me probably by now, that I'm a really big fan of growth mindset. And so when I saw, Ken, you shared on Instagram stories, a few different stories about kind of debunking growth mindset, I was like, wow. I mean, I knew there's always another side of the story. I tell that to students all the time when they have problems, or my own kids at home. There's always another side of the story. But it was one that I was just really interested in learning about, because I know so much about the pro side of growth mindset. I want to know more about the con side. And as I mentioned before we got to record here, I really want to have conversations like these so that my listeners and people can know it's okay to have this discourse, even if people disagree on something, because A, you might learn something by considering the other side of the issue, but B, and maybe even more importantly, that it's okay to have discussions where you don't necessarily see eye to eye, or you have differing opinions and maybe very, you know, extremely differing opinions, but you can still get along and you could still be friends and you could still have much respect for each other despite those differences. So, growth mindset. Just to kind of get this out of the way, my doctoral research was somewhat in the area of growth mindset, in the sense that I studied leadership practices that can be practiced by school leaders to inspire a growth mindset in teachers. And so I want to throw that out there, because obviously I've done a lot of research here, but also I did look at it from a teacher lens, not as much from a student lens. And I think, Ken, that might be where you're coming from. And so that's another reason why I want to learn more about this. Some of the research, or some of the studies that I cited in my research, again, mostly included teachers. There's one that I really wanted to point to very much in this conversation too, that was done by Zhang, Chen, Chung, and Peng. And it was basically intending to investigate the relationship amongst growth mindset, well-being, perseverance, and work engagement. And I will put the caveat out there, it was in the Chinese educational system. So not American, but I don't think it's necessarily unique to any one area. And let me put this out there first, and then I'd love to bounce it off. We'll play pinball a little bit. Bounce it off Rochelle, bounce it off Ken, see how everybody feels about it. In that article, they say that in terms of just understanding fixed versus growth mindset, people with a growth mindset hold the beliefs that intellect, personality, and ability are something that can be grown or developed over time. People with a fixed mindset hold the belief that these basic human qualities are static and unchangeable. All right. So at the very heart of the quote unquote issue here, that's what they're saying is the difference between growth and fixed. Rochelle, does that resonate with you at all?
Yeah, growth mindset is not something that I ever really, until probably, I don't know, I'm just guessing here, 6 or 7 years ago, it's not anything that I was familiar with. And I know that probably sounds strange being an educator, but my whole educational background in methodologies and teaching practices and you name it was many years ago. And I didn't have the greatest preparation for it, unlike what is out there today. So there are a lot of terms and things I never heard of. I didn't know what they meant. But when I learned it, I actually, I had read Carol Dweck's book?
Yeah.
Yeah. I had read that book and that gave me a lot more information. But then I remember being at school one day and we have bulletin boards in the school and the physics teacher outside of his room, he had a big bulletin board and it had fixed versus growth. And I was so excited. I was like, I totally know what that means. And I liked the visual that he had there. And he had, students had created some different things to share on that space. But I thought it was good for other people to kind of look at and reflect on. And for me, once I knew what fixed versus growth mindset meant, I was kind of reflecting back on my own experience as a student. And then of course, like my practice as a teacher and the different words that I use with my students or how, what I believed about myself and my own abilities to learn, whether that was back in grade school, high school, college, or even as an adult. And, trying to think through like, what kind of a mindset do I have? What's the impact of either one of these mindsets? And what do I need to do for students in terms of helping them to, build their, their investment in themselves for growth and not being afraid to be wrong. And like, there's all these different things that I started to notice more in my classroom that probably were already happening in my classroom, but I wasn't so aware of them until I learned about growth mindset and fixed mindset. And I kind of could see things happening. And then I started to address them, if any of that kind of makes sense. But prior to like I said, 5, 6, maybe 7 years ago, I had no idea. And now in the last couple of months could be actually 6 months now, I started to look more at like growth mindset and also social emotional learning and like what the connection is there as well. And just trying to kind of process all of that information in my own way and learn more about it. So that's why I'm excited to hear from both of you today.
Ken, have we said anything wrong yet?
No, we're having a discussion and I do. So before I respond to your prompt, I think it is important for the listeners to really, really process healthy dialogue. Like we don't have to agree. And I think I'm going to say, and I'm going to be intentional, part of our own personal growth is actually engaging in dialogue and learning that with others that may not be 100% agreeable with you. It doesn't mean you have to change your mind. It means that you want to be able to broaden your perspective and understanding, which is all the more reason why I'm so thrilled to be on this podcast with you all. Now, I will say that phrase, I have been the victim of that phrase being weaponized. Well, we can just agree to disagree. And what I usually do is I always respond by saying, one of my personal heroes is the late James Baldwin, and he has a quote, "We can agree to disagree as long as your disagreement isn't rooted in my dehumanization and my oppression." So the whole idea around fixed versus growth mindset for me, I recognize, and I used to always tell my students, that life is dynamic, not static. And so recognizing that things change and that we change, is a first step towards recognizing that learning is ideally lifelong, that growth is ideally, you look at it as ongoing and lifelong, and that you should not be the same person a week from now that you are today, a month, a year, so on and so forth. And I will even say that I think it's important for me to point out in this podcast, I look back at even honestly, I look back at my TEDx talk where I talked about different mindsets in there. I wish I could do it differently, but that's not a bad thing because what it means is I'm not the same person now as I was then. And so for me, I was inundated with, I've read Carol Dweck's book and I was inundated as a teacher, growth mindset, growth mindset, growth mindset. And it wasn't until I became removed from the classroom that I started to recognize that there are a lot of things that are normalized in education, especially terminology, that are very destructive and that deserve a higher degree of scrutiny because they're destructive. And growth mindset is one. That's why I'm happy we're going to have this discussion.
I am too. Let me ask you this question. So far, we've really just kind of scratched the surface in terms of what it is and the difference between fixed and growth. Have we diverged yet, or are we kind of still on the same page?
You two are bolstering what my argument is going to be.
Okay. All right.
And that's a bad, it's not a bad thing though, because we're, you know, we're going to unpack it together. And ideally for all of us and all of the listeners, you know, even if your mind isn't changed, ideally your perspective is broadened.
Yeah, that's honestly, that's what I'm looking for. And I don't know whether you'd want to call that a growth mindset or not, but
oh,
I
that's think definitely growth.
I think I would. I hope that's okay. That's, I mean, I'm really looking to grow myself from this conversation. And I know that you guys would agree, and I hope the listeners do too. So I guess then getting further into growth mindset, and again, I want to point out that this is not necessarily my own thoughts and opinions. It is backed by research in that same article I mentioned a couple minutes ago, which I don't know if I mentioned what it was called. I think I did. So it's Teachers' Growth Mindset and Work Engagement in the Chinese Educational Context, Well-Being and Perseverance of Effort as Mediators. In that article, they go on to say that growth mindset teachers encourage students to try harder because they believed they could do better. Teachers can also shape students' view of their own abilities and further motivate them toward achievement in subtle ways of language use. I'm not exactly sure where the language use comes in, but it was in there, so I figured I'd also include that. Specifically, teachers with a fixed mindset praise their students' basic attributes more often, which exert negative impacts on students' learning motivation and perseverance of effort. And research demonstrated that changing students from a fixed mindset to a growth mindset exerted a more positive impact on their academic engagement, academic performance, and resilience toward setbacks. I'm wondering, Ken, what you feel about that last piece that I said in terms of the resilience towards setbacks or anything that I mentioned, but I think I wanted to kind of hone in on that piece, because I honestly feel like sometimes that is maybe a part of growth mindset that does get misconstrued, but it's there and it's in their research. And so I'm wondering what you have to say about that in terms of teachers inspiring a growth mindset in their students and thus potentially building up more of a resilience in them.
Right. The resilience and the grit thing, right?
Right.
Yeah. Okay. So without filtering it, everything that you just read, not questioning the research, is gaslighting. If you'll notice that the descriptors that the two of you shared, and even in that article, the focus is solely on the individual.
I'm sorry to cut you off. Can you just go into what gaslighting is?
So gaslighting for the audience, gaslighting to me is what I call psychological and conversational terrorism. It's basically you are psychologically manipulating the thinking of someone else into believing something that is not necessarily aligned with their reality or their cultural context. You know, one of the big things that I share with educators, for example, is, you know, if you are in an abusive environment, or let's say here's one, because this actually happened in my last school, is forcing the victim to have a conversation with a bully by telling the victim that it's part of their responsibility to reach a agreement, if you will, with the bully. That's gaslighting, because what it does is it's saying, ignore all of the ways you've been treated up to this point, because those don't matter. And those may not even be reality. But what is reality is you have to have a conversation with the person, classmate that was bullying you. And so the whole idea, and this goes into the root of why I have so many issues with a lot of these terms, literally everything you mentioned in that article, and even what you two shared as to what you like about the growth mindset, solely focuses on the individual. And this is where I have myself even witness to the growth mindset being weaponized, because it conveniently ignores any type of cultural or societal context. Now, I will, for your audience and for you two, I taught in LA Unified. Most of the areas I taught in are economically under-resourced areas. And yes, I'm using that terminology on purpose. And so how is it, you can't tell a student, well, you just need to work harder and you just need to do better and you need to have a growth mindset and then you'll be successful. When if you look at what are the societal and institutional barriers that puts that student at a significant disadvantage, that by simply saying, oh, well, just have a growth mindset and you'll be okay. See, that's gaslighting. That's not saying, okay, I recognize that, you know, your family lives in an area where, you know, it's a food desert. You know, and this even happened with my family where, you know, you couldn't buy a home in a certain area because it's redlined. And what a surprise. If you connect redlining with the development of public school district, there's a reason why many of those school districts are under-resourced and underfunded. And so this whole idea that just simply do this is not, it's inadequate. It's not, it's not good enough. And it's gaslighting, because what it does is it tells a student that the only reason why you aren't successful is because of your own actions and your own doing, not recognizing that you are already put at a disadvantage. Now, with that being said, I recognize that there is nuance with the growth mindset as far as encouraging students to be able to push themselves, to be able to learn more, and to be able to, at least to some degree, actualize their full potential. But, you know, even Rochelle just shared, you know, I'll even put it to you all this way. Most of my students, by the time I got them in the eighth grade, had been inundated for 8 straight years with deficit-based language. You're incapable of, you need intervention, you're performing below a grade level, you're doing this, you're doing that, and so on and so forth. And so, you know, the article you mentioned about praise to the students, I actually don't agree with that at all. I think that there is a way to provide positive reinforcement. What I always say, develop an asset-based terminology that supports students in recognizing that I have unique gifts and skills, and is school providing me an opportunity to utilize those in the learning spaces that benefit both myself and my classmates.
I don't want to oversimplify what you're saying, but I like to kind of boil things down. What I'm hearing you say is that growth mindset doesn't necessarily work because it eliminates, or the way that people, at least the way that people use it and see it, it eliminates sort of these external factors that just can't really be acknowledged and considered when it comes to a student's ability to persevere.
Well, I mean, let's take that word perseverance. Okay. And quite frankly, I think a lot of these terms are rooted in 3 major areas in education. They're rooted in a white supremacy culture in education. They're rooted in the myth of meritocracy. And ultimately, those two perpetuate capitalism. And so with that being said, you know, one measure of perseverance could be that a student didn't perform well, and the teacher gave them an opportunity to do it over and over and over again until they performed to their standard. Okay, that's one. However, I would argue that most of my students in many of the schools I worked at demonstrated degrees of resilience and perseverance because they're going through areas of which, you know, they see dilapidated homes. You know, their parents are working 2 or 3 jobs just to be able to put food on the table. They don't get breakfast, so they have to get it at school. I mean, you know, the whole idea around applying these terms situated within a societal context and being responsive to an individual's needs. I have many students that showed, I mean, look, I would even argue, which student shows more responsibility and perseverance? The student that does that paper over and over and over again until they get it right, or that student that is able to accomplish their schoolwork to the best of their ability, but also is fulfilling their home responsibilities by taking care of their younger sibling? And I had students that did that. They had to walk their younger siblings to school, then they came to school. Then they went and picked them up, and they took them home.
I want to tell you a story real quick. And as you mentioned before, obviously this discussion is not you're right, I'm wrong, anything like that. It's just learning from each other. And I agree with you 100% when you say that students have challenging home lives, and it really takes away from their, whether or not they have a fixed mindset or growth mindset, just they, it's very hard for them to succeed in school. And I'll never forget a student that I had. I want to also mention, I've worked in the Bronx, I've worked in Derby, Connecticut, now Norwalk, Connecticut, major cities. Well, Derby was really small, but cities nonetheless. And I forget the term you used before, but definitely students who are
Economically under-resourced and underfunded.
Under-resourced and underfunded. So I had a student back in the day who I started to give him a little bit of a hard time about some kind of assignment that was due or homework not getting done or something like that. And he explained to me, and this is where relationships are huge, obviously. That's a whole nother conversation. But this student trusted me enough to let me know, you know, Mr. Krynas, I'm sorry, but when I get home, I forget exactly how he explained it to me. I'm paraphrasing a little bit, but he was the daycare provider for his, not just his family, his apartment complex. A lot of the working parents who lived on his floor or in his building trusted him and entrusted him with their kids for him to watch them and help them get their work done after school. And so he was so busy helping the other kids of the families that lived in his building that he couldn't really do his work and get it done on time. And it really, that was, I had been teaching for a handful of years already, and I had had a couple of instant occurrences like this, but that one really made me think a lot about what you're saying right now. I want to hear from Rochelle. What do you think in all this?
Yeah, same here.
I have no idea. Is that the honest answer? No, like I'm not in the good. Well, one thing I'll go back to what Ken had said before too is like the broadening perspectives. And that's something that I don't know if it's because the attorney part of me where I listen to, you know, and I never really take a definitive stand one way or the other. I like to know all sides of whatever the issue or the discussion is about, because I want to be involved in the conversation. I want to be able to understand somebody else's perspective without just saying, oh yeah, this is the greatest idea and I stand on this, because then I close myself off to those conversations, opportunities to learn. And again, like here I am like, oh yeah, growth mindset, fixed mindset. I know, not that I know everything there is to know about it. Clearly I don't. But when we started the conversation, you know, what I thought my view of it was has already shifted some. And not that I'm saying like thinking that, oh, I totally had it wrong. It's just, I'm looking at it with a different lens now because of what Ken has been adding to the conversation. And so it's leading me both of you, actually, I'm just taking it all in and thinking a little bit differently. And I hadn't considered like outside factors, for example, like, oh, okay, kids, you have to do this. And if you keep doing this activity or these things, well, what about the kids that don't have access to those things or whatever the resources are? Then how do they, you know, like, oh, well, I could say to my students in Spanish, you know, if you just go and you study Spanish every day and you use this app and that tool or whatever this is, what if when they leave school, and it's not a what if, it's in when they leave school, because some students go home and they don't have the device or they don't have the Wi-Fi, and maybe they want to do those things, but they can't because they don't have it. And then they're going to come back and I'm going to say, well, why didn't you do that? Like, that's your opportunity to go. Like, now you're just staying put. You're not expanding your abilities. And so I hadn't really considered that other part of it. I was just looking at the, like, this is what it is. And I need to do these things as a teacher and use the right language to say, like, not just good job, but kind of engage them in a different conversation to kind of keep them going. And so I'm kind of absorbing all of this like a sponge right now and sifting through. So I don't know. I can't add anything because both of you are saying things that resonate with me and that I agree with. But then as soon as, like, if Dan talks and then Ken speaks, I'm like, oh, I like what Ken just said there. Like, I'm totally with that. And then Dan comes up with a point and then it caused me to think differently. But I think that's what the key is just listening to everybody's, I don't know, impressions of it, experiences with the perspectives of it. And that's probably the best thing as far as a takeaway is, like, at the end of this episode, after everybody listens, are they going to be able to say, yeah, I'm against growth mindset, or growth mindset is the way to go? Or are they just going to look at what they're doing in their classrooms or in their schools differently with the understanding that, like, it's not one or the other. It's what works for me, what I need to do, what I need to understand about my students. So I'm going to end it with that.
No, that's great. You know, so a couple of things. So I'll provide an internal example as well, but I appreciate, Dan, I appreciate you sharing that story. That story was more the norm for many of my students than the exception.
Yeah.
And I'm going to share a couple of things. So one is, you know, in that instance, you know, and this is, again, I think for us as educators, I do think, you know, and this is aligned with the growth mindset, by the way, which I don't think is emphasized enough. We should interrogate our own thinking, our own actions on a consistent and regular basis to ask ourselves, is what I'm doing supporting my own growth and then that of those that I either influence, that I work with, or that I engage with? Okay, so that's number one. Because I will tell you all, in the work that I do, there's a whole lot of educators that will use that phrase, growth mindset, but their actions are the exact opposite, especially the trainings I do around anti-bias and anti-racism in education. And I call them on it. And I say, well, wait a minute. I looked at some of your school or your district communications, and you say that you have a culture of a growth mindset, but yet the very nature of us doing this work together, now you're resistant to it.
hold that thought for a second, because I want to interject with something that you kind of set me up for. I wanted to include anyway, and this is the perfect time to do it. In that same article on the Chinese education and the intermingling of the growth mindset and perseverance and all that, there was cited research that said, and I quote, additionally, fixed mindset individuals are more inclined to stereotyping. And I'm going to agree with you here when I say that in my experience, and I know that there are more people out there that I haven't experienced as well in education, who either think or claim to that they have a growth mindset, but yet when it comes to certain feelings, and I'm with you here, certain feelings about certain kinds of people, they are completely fixed.
Correct.
Take that and run with it.
Correct. And so going to what Rochelle was sharing, how does that show up in the learning spaces for historically marginalized and oppressed students? And I'll even tie that into even shifting terminology. So, you know, Rochelle, you mentioned Spanish. So I'm going to share with the two of you and your listeners, I discourage the use of English language learner, ELL, because you see what that does is that creates a cultural hierarchy on language. You're striving to be able to speak English, yet think about it, and we all know, what's the value of being multilingual on a global context, okay? And so what I used to always say to my students is you're emerging bilingual. It's a benefit, but think about school where it's constantly, oh, you're an ELL, you need to learn English. See, that's deficit-based. For me, it's like, oh, you're emerging bilingual. That means you're going to be fluent in two languages. You see what I just did? Now, Think if you're a student of mine, what is your overall disposition going to be when you enter the learning space with me? And you see that right there, that encouragement. I understand social context. I understand in this case, the cultural hierarchy. But think about a student now, what is the likelihood that they're going to adopt many of the positive characteristics that we know that are associated with growth mindset of, okay, Mr. Shelton is telling me that I'm emerging bilingual and being bilingual is a value. So therefore, that's why I'm going to go through these efforts. And he recognizes what external messaging I'm getting that he's rejecting because I do have gifts and I am going to fulfill my potential in my learning so that I can share my gifts. And then I even bring that up to the point around things like, you know, even for me, you know, most of our learning spaces are what I would say, they do two things. They reward the dominant culture and they perpetuate capitalism. So for example, growth mindset, you just need to work harder, you need to work harder. There's this whole idea that time and action equals productivity. Now think about that in a capitalistic context. The more I tell you need to work harder, that perpetuates the myth of meritocracy, the more time you're likely to put into something, excluding any of the barriers that might exist to entry. It's a question I like to ask educators around, if you were to do a breakdown of the demographic of the top of the Fortune 100 CEOs, what would you find? You know, and remember, I'm a tech guy. If you were to look at the boards of all the big tech companies, what would you find? So how can you tell a student you just need to work hard and you'll accomplish something when the constant messaging they're getting from the social context and the curriculum is you don't belong here because there's no representations of that?
I wouldn't be a good content creator if I didn't market myself. And one of my fairly recent podcast episodes, Ken, I don't know if you know him, I had on Alex Pate, who just came out with a book not too long ago, The Innocent Classroom. And I'm going to refer my listeners, if you haven't checked that out, back to that episode, because I think some of the things you're talking about here, Ken, are aligned with his mission and what he writes about in his book, in the sense that he talks about these marginalized students who have to live their lives every day and come to school every day, knowing that they have these stereotypes and these strong negative feelings toward them and the people who look like them and live like them. And his work is all around trying to get educators to work with the students to help relieve and alleviate that guilt that they feel. And that's the innocence. But I hear you, because I think you're saying something a little different, which is it is just so hard for them to shed that guilt when not only the odds in life, but the education system itself is stacked against them. I hear you there. I definitely do.
Look, I can't, you know, you could say, well, you should adopt a growth mindset so that you could be a future engineer. Okay, great. Now, if I'm not reading about other Black male engineers, if not reading about the accomplishments of those that look like me, i.e. my learning experience serves as a mirror. If I don't see it, then I'm not necessarily going to believe it. And if I don't believe it, then you decrease the likelihood that I can do it. And to the point you just made, you know, it's me asking educators, you know, how inclusive is your curriculum and your learning environment that will serve as a mirror, the window, and a sliding glass door, which is a reference I have in one of my talks, so that I can say, okay, now I can see that if I put forth the efforts in the right areas and I'm supported with, you know, the resources, the language, the nurturing, you know, Rochelle mentioned the SEL component, you know, if I'm not navigating a trauma-inducing learning environment, then yeah, then now I can start to adopt all those, you know, all the things that we all would agree are a positive around a growth mindset. But my main thing with educators in general is that, you know, if you think in terms of, you know, and I can go down the list, growth mindset, grit, resilient, rigor, accomplishment, achievement, high performing, all of the words, think about how much of the terminology we use in education that can easily, that so easily identifies the individual without interrogating the system, without saying, okay, why do we have to take standardized tests? Well, standardized tests are to maintain a racial and a social hierarchy. I recently posted something on Twitter that it was interesting how it evolved into dialogue on Twitter that I'm going to do a blog posting around where I basically said we need to actually start rejecting how we look at grading. You know, I mean, to me, I don't know. I mean, I've heard of a few, and thankfully it's only a few, but my thing was, is I had posted where if a teacher, I basically said, if failing students is your jam, then you need to accept the fact that you condone abusive learning environments and you should resign. Because like no educator should say, I'm okay with a student failing. But to defend educators, I do recognize that sometimes we are not provided the resources and the support for our own social and emotional needs to then be there at 100% for our students.
Great points. You know, I'll actually go back also to a conversation that Rochelle and I had a couple of episodes ago on grading and assessment. And I brought up another story of a student who the year prior to when I taught her had major attendance issues. She struggled in terms of her ability to learn. She was being referred for special services. And I just knew that the only way this student was really going to be able to do any sort of work in my class was to sit with her either one-on-one or in a small group setting, and we would have to do it together and kind of me holding her hand through it. And when I passed the student with a 65 and everyone else on my grade level team failed her, they all asked, how could you have passed her? I said, because I know she could do the work. It's the bare minimum. I get it. I get that. But it's not about the participation grade. It's about the fact that this girl is finally coming to school fairly consistently. And when she does, I make sure that we work together so that she can get it done. And I think of a story like that, you know, as you're saying everything that you're saying. Rochelle, any questions at this point for Ken? Because I got a couple of big ones that I want to kind of wrap up with here. But
I think it's something I need to process. But when Ken was talking about the like ELL, I mean, the terminology, like ESL, ELL, they've been changing. And I never thought until you just spoke a little while ago about the potential problems, misunderstandings, whatever I forget how you said it.
Emerging bilingual.
Oh, yeah, yeah. But I never considered like breaking down like the English language learners and why that might be. You said the other phrase for what you just said, emerging bilinguals, which I was like, oh, I really like that. But there was another term. I don't know if you said deficit thinking or.
So the saying English language learner is a deficit based approach because again, it places a hierarchy on language, saying that English is the pinnacle, and you need to strive to speak English.
I'm also going to go a little bit more meta here and say that's a cultural and societal issue in our country, given the fact that so many people still think English has to be the language, whereas. Hello, it's 2020. We need to be a lot more inclusive and understanding of all the different languages that get spoken here in our country.
That's right. And so Yeah, I 100% agree with you. You know, this is precisely why I would tell my students, there's power in being multilingual. I happen to be able to speak functionally fluent 4 different languages. So when I travel to countries of which one of those other languages is a primary language, I do not feel that I cannot communicate effectively to a person who that is their primary language. I feel empowered because I can go, you know, one of my favorite things to share is, you know, when we travel, of course, is what direction do the tourists go? They go left. Perfect. I'm going right. And I know that I will be able to have enough dialogue to be able to effectively communicate a need, a want, or need or a want. And so this whole idea around, you know, again, the terminology we use, you know, and Rochelle, I don't have the pictures, but when I would say those things to the students, you know, I consider myself continuous growth to be what I would say observationally literate. And that is that I look for the nonverbal communication all the time. And of course, it's harder now because we're remote with everything. But I will tell you that the looks on the students' faces when I'm saying, you know, even here's one for you, even something as simple as this, you know, one of the things I've normalized with the workshops I do now, especially the race and bias workshop, I literally ask everyone in attendance, what gifts do you bring to the discussion? And then I follow up by saying, by the way, when you think in terms of learning culture, which I don't want to say it's a shameless plug, but it is a book I'm working on. The working title right now is Culture Eats Pedagogy for Breakfast. But with that being said, I asked him, how often in your schooling were you ever asked, what gifts do you bring to the learning environment? And sadly, I don't have the formal research, but I will say more than 98% of the responses are never.
All right, Ken, I got 2 questions for you as we wrap up here. And the first one, I know you've delved into it quite a bit here over the last 42 and a half minutes, but I guess to play devil's advocate with you, what I'm wondering, and I certainly wouldn't, I can't prove that I've grown myself if I'm putting down a lot of the members of communities of the, I keep forgetting that term you're using, but under-resourced individuals. I don't want to take anything away from the fact that clearly we have people in those communities and they are struggling or whatever the right word is in terms of just what is stacked against them. But can we for a second just maybe, can growth mindset be used to help people shift away from what they're dealing with and struggling with toward understanding that that things will be, and not things will be okay. What am I really trying to say? Can we say that if you adopt a certain mindset, whether or not you want to call it growth mindset, that's okay, that you might need to help get yourself out of those feelings that you have based on the situation that you're in? Does that make sense?
I'm glad you're asking that question. So my short answer is yes. My more detailed answer is the first step is to interrogate the systems that lead to the inequities in the first place. So again, you know, when you think about many of the economically under-resourced areas, you know, why are housing prices suppressed in those areas? What is the accessibility? You know, we don't have the time now. Maybe if y'all have me back, I could even share a story around what a whole series of projects I did with students that I call community empowerment, where we looked at real tangible problems in the community and how we might be a solution to them. Because one of the things that I vehemently despised and rejected in the terminology that many of my colleagues were using was, you need to do well in education so you can get out of your community. And I'm like, how you sound saying that? This is where they live. I'm like, no, let's find a problem that exists in the community and how we might be the solution to that problem.
See, that's exactly what I didn't want to say. I had to be really careful about how I don't want to think that way. And I don't think that way. But I know that there are people who do.
There are, unfortunately, and those equate to abusive learning environments because you're basically marginalizing and oppressing a student that look, when we look at the power dynamic of education, students rarely have any agency. But to answer your question, so the example you shared of the student you had that was tasked with taking care of the kids in the apartment complex, I had students that did that. So here's how you adopt a broader understanding that's aligned with, I would say, more of a growth mindset. As I would literally ask the students, okay, I see what you're doing. How might we use some of those very same skills that you're using in the context of what we're learning. So for example, the student you shared, I would say, okay, so let's look at some of the positives of what you're doing. One, you're able to communicate effectively with and support and take care of a lot of kids. You know, there's a lot of adults that can't do that. Okay, so that's one. Number two, you're able to rally a group of kids together around a common goal, which is in this case, is you're ensuring their health and their safety during the time that you're there together. Sounds to me like you're a good team player. Sounds to me like you can communicate with groups and get them to identify a common goal or a common purpose. You see what I'm saying? You start to, you're going away from deficit into an asset focus. So when I looked at some of my, the areas that I worked in that were underfunded and under-resourced, my whole thing was, okay, here's an example of what I would call your own agency and your own empowerment. Someone gets elected from your area that represents the voice of the community. What does it look like if you become a candidate for the city council or whatever component is a representation of your community? How much more effective will your voice be if you have a deeper understanding of your community? What learning is necessary for you to be in a competitive position to be able to run for that position and then be the voice of your community? What resources are necessary? How might we find those resources if they don't exist in your community? So you see, I'm not ignoring the challenges that exist. What I'm saying is, it's what I call being culturally relevant and culturally responsive. I know it exists, and there are some things that we can do to dismantle those things, and I'm not going to conveniently ignore those by simply defaulting to, oh, you just need to have a growth mindset and you'll be fine.
You handle that great. I actually was going to ask you for my last question, kind of how educators can start to build in that idea of doing away with the deficit thinking, the deficit model, if you want to call it that. And I think, Rochelle, not to take words out of your mouth, you said this already. I know for me, definitely, my biggest takeaway from this conversation with you has been that we all need to strip away anything we do or say that can be construed as that deficit piece. And I really appreciate you saying that, because it does have me thinking differently already. And I don't think I was ever opposed to any of your ideas, and I don't think you were of mine either, but we came at it from a little bit of a different vantage point, and I appreciate everything you said, but that's definitely my biggest takeaway. And Rochelle, if you could maybe, I don't know if you have some parting thoughts, and then Ken, as you wrap up, please obviously let the listeners know where they can catch more of your content and all the things that you share. And I don't want you to give anything away for free, but I'm wondering, as you wrap up, if you could just maybe share a couple of other ideas that educators can start with, at least, to do away with that deficit thinking.
All right. So I'm up, right?
Yes.
I have so much to think about now. And that's what I love about these conversations. And one thing that strikes me is that I'm so glad that I'm not keeping myself isolated as an educator anymore, like I did for so many years, because just in the past, well, just today in this time talking with both of you, but even in the past 3 to 6 months, I think how much my thinking, my perspective, my understanding of so many different things has changed because of the conversations. And they're not always comfortable conversations, right? Because you're either in the middle of two potential disagreeing sides, or you thought you knew about something and then you hear somebody else's perspective and it's like, wow, I was totally wrong. And it's not, and it might be true in some case, you might be totally wrong because that does happen. But I think it's, like I said before, I think it's just so important to be aware of all different sides, not just say, oh yeah, I'm going to do growth mindset because I read about it or I saw it on Twitter or like so-and-so said, this is what I need to be doing and I haven't been and I'm wrong, because that's not it. It's like, what's the value in, if it's a growth mindset, what's the value in it or whatever the thing is. Like you always focus on like the why, the purpose, but looking, and something else I said too that I became more aware of is mindful of circumstances. Back when schools closed in the spring, we weren't meeting regularly because students didn't have access or whatever. And I was like, why aren't they joining in when they can? You know, well, some of them were essential workers. And I said that to somebody earlier, and it never occurred to me. Like I knew students were working, but I just thought they were at home and I didn't know what all of their other responsibilities were. And so I think that's the benefit of having conversations like this, or for people tuning into podcasts or just joining in chats or in conferences, whatever. Don't be afraid to kind of share your opinion, even if, and it's hard sometimes, even if you are going to be met with pushback, because that's what keeps us thinking and changing and growing. And I'm not going to lie, like I've learned a lot of new terms today, and my mind is still thinking about what Ken said about the ELL. Like, I keep coming back to that and thinking about the message that it sends. And I love that Ken said about the, you know, the observations, those nonverbal cues, and reading, you know, reading the room, reading the students, the faces, of course, if we're in virtual, like if their cameras are on, or not. So it's just a lot of things to be mindful of, regardless of what it is. And I will leave it with that. Leave it at that.
I love it. No, I mean, look, you know, just to sum it all up, you know, one of the things I share in my anti-bias workshop is it's called the Dunning-Kruger effect, which is that we think we know more than we actually know. And my favorite phrase attached to that that I love to share with educators that, Rochelle, you just mentioned is, if our default is cognitive humility, there's a whole lot that I know, but there's a whole lot more that I don't know. And I'm willing to engage in whatever platforms or avenues, like us together on this podcast, to learn more. I mean, Dan, feel free to correct me if I'm wrong. That right there in and of itself is a type of a growth mindset. Okay.
That's exactly what I was thinking. That's right.
Yeah, exactly. No, we're on the same page.
I didn't want to say it. It's so funny.
Nah, bro, look, I knew we would be more on the same page than not.
And that's exactly, I mean, again, you know, and I'll give you the last words. I really wanted to respect you and give you that. But that's, again, just circling back to the very beginning of the episode, that's exactly why I wanted to have this conversation with you. Because when I saw you post that stuff, and you have obviously some dissenting thoughts and opinions about growth mindset, at least the term and the way it's used towards students especially, I'm like, man, I really want to discuss that and learn more. And it wasn't about coming at each other, who's right, who's wrong. It was just learning more about where we're coming from. And Rochelle has learned a lot. I've learned a lot. I think it's been awesome. Thank you so much.
Yeah, no, I'm look, you know, again, cognitive humility. And, you know, the thing that I encourage educators to do in general is, if there is a very popular term or way of thinking, i.e. fill in the blank mindset, just, you know, to borrow from Rochelle, just be mindful of how much responsibility, emphasis, and I guess, for lack of a better term, just those two, responsibility and emphasis is placed on the individual without questioning anything that is systemic. Because ultimately, if that's the case, then it does, again, that's why I mentioned it does two things. It's to maintain a racial hierarchy, and it's to perpetuate a myth of meritocracy. And that doesn't serve any of us in any beneficial capacity. So I really appreciate the two of you having me on. I appreciate the conversation. I will just say that I think education needs more of these types of conversations rather than just accepting things the way that they are. But I also know that school actually is designed for us to accept things the way they are, which is why the three of us have mentioned at various times that we're constantly unlearning. There's so much that I learned in grad school that, you know, it took me several years in the classroom to realize, yeah, that's not the way this works. And Dan, you even just mentioned one, like relationship with the students. I mean, you know, in conclusion, I'll share the last thing. You know, I shared in one of my talks, how many of us were told, don't smile until Christmas? That's just absurd. It's just so ridiculous. Like, but it wasn't until one of my students was like, you know, aren't you happy to be here? And I'm like, well, yeah, I love it. And they're like, well, how come you don't smile? I'm like, holy cow, you're right. I'm going to smile from now on. I'm like, damn, that's the way I was taught. That's wrong. You know, again, cognitive humility. So at any rate, I thank you all. You know, I mean, your listeners can find me on all the social medias. My website is kennethshelton.net. I actually have a podcast I do with a very close friend of mine, D. Lanier, called The Liberated Educator, where we unpack a number of things. And we follow what's called a CPT format. And yes, there is a cultural context even to that initialism. But, you know, I just want to conclude by saying I appreciate you, the both of you, having me on here. And I hope, I look forward to the day, not even I hope, I look forward to the day that the three of us are able to share coffee or break bread together and continue our conversations, whether they're recorded or not.
Sounds good to
Absolutely.
Me.
Thank you so much again. Rochelle, where can everybody find you?
Twitter, Instagram, podcast that I talk to myself on, and my blog, Ardenae915.
And I can be found everywhere at Dr_Krinus on all the socials, of course, Leader of Learning, leaderoflearning.com. And we're going to say that this episode and the show notes and all the information will go out at leaderoflearning.com/mindset. And again, I want to mention that listeners can also kind of participate in the conversations as well after the fact by going to flipgrid.com/devilsadvocate. One of the longest episodes that we've done, and certainly in the lifetime of my podcast, but man, what an awesome conversation. So Rochelle and Ken, thank you guys so much.
Thank you.
Hey, Leader of Learning. I wanted to talk to you about an amazing new service and supportive platform called Skilled Space. You know, educational technology is a big part of my job as an instructional coach, and it's certainly more essential to good teaching now than it's ever been before. It's also clear that not every teacher is getting the tech help they need, but teachers like you or someone you know still deserve a space to get the coaching they deserve. That's where Skilled Space comes in. The same folks who brought us powerful tools such as Swivel are building a world where you'll never struggle again with EdTech. Skilled Space brings a whole galaxy of skills to your fingertips as a one-stop shop for quick and convenient virtual coaching that's on your terms and within your schedule. And no discount code needed here because it's 100% free. So if you need help or if you want to help others, head over to skilled.space. Thank you so much for joining us. We encourage you to help contribute to the series. If you want to suggest topic ideas or comment on any of the conversations we have about trending topics in education, please participate on Flipgrid using the topic code Devil's Advocate or visiting flipgrid.com/devilsadvocate. If you haven't done so yet, don't forget to subscribe to the Leader of Learning podcast on your favorite podcast app. Also, if you enjoy the content shared on the show, please recommend this podcast to others. I would also appreciate it if you'd leave a positive rating and review on iTunes or Podchaser. Links to leave ratings and reviews can be found in the show notes. Thanks, and see you again for another episode of The Devil's Advocate next month.